Today's title, Stammering Miracles, Towards the Poetry of Joy. The phrase Stammering Miracles comes from Tennessee Williams. He was commenting and critiquing Eugene O'Neill. Eugene O'Neill wrote these remarkable, amazing plays, complex, interesting, experimental, difficult, long, and they were filled with words that actors had a great deal of difficulty in saying, because they were put in ways in which we do not normally speak. And Tennessee Williams, who wrote The Way People Usually Speak and Then Some, in talking about O'Neill, said that what he did was he stammered miracles, that it wasn't the kind of speech that you're used to, but what he did in the poetry of what he created was truly astounding if we were open to being open to dropping the usual filters that we put on dialogue and to understand what was being said as poetry. In traditional religions, there is a process of Advent, if you will, of preparation for great holidays and holy days. We know that we have entered that process, even as Unitarian Universalists, because the first holiday decorations have gone up, and Thanksgiving is still, how long away? 2 weeks away, and so we know that it is Advent. We are preparing for the seasonal celebration. Now, I'm using all these generic words because our seasons have also become generic. And in an abundance of caution and not wanting to either reflect or offend any actual religion, we have created a generic religion, and that is, of course, commercial. When people stand outside like prophets and decry the commercialization of Christmas, or want to get the Christ back in Christmas and the Chanukah back in Hanukkah. What are the options? We have made it so safe and so generic and have created the new right not to ever be offended by anything that anybody does or says, that we are stuck with the commercialization. And one of the things that, because we can talk about it and we can be upset about it and we can rant and rail and rage against the commercialization because we can't actually have a conversation publicly about holidays, which is interesting. See, our Advent really begins with Halloween. And the irony here, are you ahead of me yet? The irony here is that we are more comfortable with ghosts than with saints. That we are more comfortable in dealing with the ghosts in which most people do not believe, and therefore, I guess, are not really frightened, than we are in talking about the various traditionally religious figures. Now, I know in a Unitarian Universalist church, you're not going to be expecting a sermon on how we ought to unite church and state, and this is not that sermon. I believe in the separation of church and state, but I don't believe in just gray gruel. There are in our world and in our land Christians and Muslims and Jews and Buddhists and humanists and atheists and all kinds of beliefs and non-beliefs, and what a wonderful party. What a wonderful celebration. As somebody who teaches a course at the university in several courses in comparative religion and in the origins of religion, I see the same common threads running through all of these different religions. And there's so much that we share in common and so little to be afraid and offended by that if we could just invite each other to the party and talk about these things and experience them together. But what happens, and what happens particularly in a Unitarian Universalist framework, is that we're afraid. First of all, it is much easier to be against. It is much easier to be upset. It is much easier to be a prophet standing at the edge and decrying all of the terrible things that are going on in society. And we can, all of us, be articulate and often correct in observing and talking about what is not working, what the great problems of the world are, what the great problems of our community are, and we'll be accurate and we'll be passionate and we'll feel good about it. I call this the decrying game. And Unitarian Universalists are particularly good at decrying accurately the problems of society. But we are, and like to think of ourselves, as an articulate people. People who can say things clearly because we see things clearly. And if we see clearly, if we understand, we should be able to explain in good, concrete language exactly what we believe, what we see, and what we should do. I find this not at all to be the case. I find one of the central ironies of my own life is that my greatest article of faith is that my most important experiences, my most real and profound moments, are ineffable. I cannot put them into clear atomic sentences and phrases. And I am left trying to work with these words, knowing that words fail and words must fail when we just have those words alone. I look for places of unconstitutional vagueness, phrases that are poetic, that express and convey and sing and dance the experiences that go from my eyes to my heart. I want to have within the religion that I practice times of ineffable beauty and ecstasy. We have, as human beings, spiritual needs. There I've done it. I've used the S word in a Unitarian Universalist church, spiritual. And what I mean by this is we do not live by bread alone. We need cheese and crackers, cookies and milk, ice cream and cake, yea, even unto cruciferous vegetables we need. We need an entire smorgasbord of ways to nourish our souls as well as our bodies. And some of those ways lead us just to stammering, to uttering at times nonsense. But all nonsense is not created equal. Sometimes we stammer miracles when we feel the beauty. When we stand at a sunset, when we attend a birth, when we attend to the dying, in those moments, there is ineffable beauty and magic and sadness. There are moments, there are times, there are portals, and this gets us back to Halloween. One of the stories of Halloween is Halloween and the Day of the Dead is a time when the veil between the living and the dead gets unusually thin. There are lots of those portals, lots of those thin, permeable membranes that we celebrate from time to time in our great holidays and holy days. That's one of the things that we do at, obviously, Halloween, at Thanksgiving, at Hanukkah, at Christmas, when the metaphors become bread, the metaphors become light, the metaphors all lead to a sense of joy and of celebration in the heart and in the dark of winter. our hymns today spoke and sang eloquently, what I obviously can't articulate. I just washed my mouth and can't do a thing with it. But they sing eloquently about spending our passion and going for those moments of ecstasy that may not be completely reasonable. There are lots of ways that human beings live half lives and draw lines that keep out part of the fullness of human experience. Sometimes Unitarian Universalism, in an enthusiasm bordering on arrogance, looks at other religions, more traditional religions, and say, you know, it's a good spiritual talk, but they don't really get out there on the ground and deliver the services to the hungry and to the poor. And we say, you know, if you're just in church as an audience, whether it's a traditional church or a Unitarian church or a mosque or a synagogue, and you're just an audience, you are not a believer. A believer is somebody whose beliefs find expression. And so we make this criticism, and I think we do a pretty good job of expressing our beliefs in action. Not a perfect job, Jim will remind us of that, but a good job. And a good job that grows in enthusiasm as we lose some of our fear of being involved and being connected. But we too can be only half a religion when we drop off the other conversation, the other avenues that nourish us and nourish our spiritual needs, our needs to take in energy, our need to feel a part and a connection to the source of life, to the universe, to each other. Our need from time to time not to abandon reason, but to take vacations of ecstasy and to sing without judging the words, to dance without being scared to death that someone is watching and judging us, and to give our hearts, in a sense, of passion and joy and awe. If words were enough, I guess we wouldn't have to write music. We wouldn't have to sing. If words were enough, Michelangelo or Will wouldn't have to work so hard to reveal and bring out life from the inanimate. If words were enough, we wouldn't have to struggle with the chaos and the inchoate. We could just put it into sentences and tame it. But our words alone won't do it. We need our hearts. We need our souls. We need to be aware of those portals from time to time that show up in the social, the civic, and the religious calendar of the year. We need to know about those portals that take place at births, at marriages. I'm going to be a part of your marriage, but I'm not marrying you. You're marrying each other. This will be a moment when there is a transition and something that some time and place where people look into each other's eyes, and it's a magical moment, and it is ineffable. And even the camera people who will stand in circle, and the videographers who capture it all, and all of us who go on wonderful trips and try to capture within our film, or now our chips, the incredible sunset, that momentary flash of a smile in our friend and partner, the laughter of a child, to capture it on film in a box and put it on a piece of paper, it's a natural impulse, but it's not the experience. It's a secondhand version that we have to do to remind us, and that takes us only a little way back into the magic of that ineffable moment, that bright flash as the sun goes down, that flash of eye, that beat of heart, that thrill that fills us. We are bound to try to stammer miracles, to try to talk about our deepest and most important experiences, and we are bound to fail, and that is all right. That is all right. It's not at all accidental that in Dante's Divine Comedy, when the guide when he comes back from hell, he can't talk about what he is seeing. This flame that is my tongue cannot speak what I have seen. And it can't speak not because there are no words, and not because the experience was just a dream or an ephemera, but it can't speak because those moments defy being captured in the net of our words. We are always going to struggle with the chaos of society, and we will be called to engage it, and we will never be done. And we must struggle with the chaos of our own feelings and the ineffable pains and joys and pleasures and despairs and hopes that we have. And that, too, can never be finished and finalized in a summation, in a valedictory address, in just simple words, because life and love and our entire world of experience is just too alive to be captured in the net of our words. So sometimes we speak nonsense. And sometimes the nonsense, when it is political, is true nonsense. And sometimes the nonsense, when it is poetical, is healthy, nourishing, important, and even life-giving nonsense. I hope that today's sharing of my nonsense with you and my struggle with the beautiful, glorious chaos, the raw material that we name and rename, that we fix into a model for a moment and then accept that it changes and it flows on and demands upon us again and again to get involved, to wrestle, to shape, and to love. Our hymn encouraged you to spend everything you have in loveliness.